Welcome to Bare Roots,
the podcast that unearths the truth.
Allegedly.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina.
And I'm Shannon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bare Roots Podcast. Today, we are tackling a tradition that, you know, many, I think, conspiracists would like to dive into, maybe even believe, and that is Bigfoot. Shannon, how are you feeling about today's episode? And also, while we're on topic, welcome back, everybody. I know we took a little summer break, but we are here. We're back, ready to go for another season.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back. It's been a while. I am very distracted at the moment because there is a mouse actively in my kitchen and I'm recording, so I can't do anything about it. But yeah, little update. I have moved. So if it sounds a little echoey in here, it's because I'm in a much larger space than I was previously. And yeah, that's, if it sounds different, that's why. And this is now me realizing that I do have mice. I need to figure out what to do about that. I did not know that until now.
Now that you have this information, it's just like, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
Knowledge is power.
It poked its little head out from underneath the oven. Winter's coming. I guess
winter is coming. That's what it's telling me.
That's what it's saying, you know, and this episode's really going to be like an intro into spooky season. We are going to like diverge a little bit from our normal format. We're going to give you like a quote unquote on the record, and then we're going to go into story time. We're going to go into campfire stories. We actually have candles lit to kind of bring that vibe to the campfire story.
I wish you guys could see the setup that we have. Like, Shannon has a great one. There's an old school candle just going. We're not talking like Bath and Body Works. I'm talking, I don't even know, just a nice,
like a tall, strong candle.
Yeah.
The wax is dripping down it. It's very witchy. Mm-hmm. We'll see how low it gets by the end of this episode. I also have my windows open and I have moved to a more rural location. I doubt you can hear it, but maybe you can hear some like nighttime noises, which will add to the campfire appeal.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we have some woodland creatures.
I feel like I've been trying to say this candle scent two times now. And you're like, and I have my windows open.
I'm sorry.
No. Period. I just got really excited. I didn't know you were done. You finished the scene, Shannon.
It's okay. The scene is set.
The scene is set. So Shannon's creating a mood, but I'm not. I'm creating a commercial mood. And I am lighting, or I will be lighting, once it gets story time, because this specific candle does the crackle sounds of fire. And it is, for anybody listening, it's called Tropical Oasis Sand and Driftwood at the Beach. So thank you, Shannon, for my moment to share what the scent is.
You're welcome. I think your candle really fits the vibe because we are out of summer at this point. But I will give points for the creativity with the crackling.
Yes, yes. I'm trying. Okay. So let's dive in, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So as you mentioned, we're going to talk about, you know, kind of on the record sightings, quote unquote, what people have seen and like how far back. And I don't know about you, Shannon, if you knew this, but first sightings actually date back as far as the 15th century in the Caucasus mountain region between Asia and Europe. Each country kind of has their own version of like what they call Bigfoot. So our longtime listeners will know about the Yeti, which is like found in the Himalayas. We have an episode. Be sure to go look into that if you are, you know, really feeling this one. And in Australia, they actually have one called the Yowie, which I did not know. Mm-hmm. And then in America, specifically, typically in the Pacific Northwest, we call them Bigfoot. So that's our American version. And we're going to talk about what people have seen, you know, what are people talking about? There's been hundreds of sightings in America. So as Shannon talked about earlier, we're going to have multiple stories because there's just a lot. Like, this is not something that people are not talking about. A lot of primatologists do not believe that Bigfoot exists, but there are some people that do. And I mean, my goodness, with so many sightings, could it be real? I don't know. We're going to dive into it. Specifically, there's a famous one. It's the mouse.
Mouse is now fully out from under the stove and it's just in my kitchen. I just scared it. Okay, it's back under.
Oh my God. He just wants to hear the story of Bigfoot.
That's true. I shouldn't. Yes, you're right. It's story time.
Story time. He's coming out. He saw the candle. He saw the mood that you were setting and wanted to come join. It's fine. It's just a furry critter. It's like, you're like pretty much Cinderella, you know? Just put.
Oh.
Or is it Snow White? I don't know. They both have a lot of critters.
Yeah, I think all of them kind of like to sing. You know, Fiona from Shrek. We have all of these. I could be an
exactly.
ogre.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I would like to say you're the princess version, but I digress. Okay, let's talk about it. So in 1958, there was a guy named Gerald Crewe. And this story is pretty much like the famous one that a lot of people go to in reference, where he discovered large footprints near his bulldozer in Bluff Creek and created a mold of this. He's like, hey guys, I got something. What is it? And an editor caught the story and wrote about it in the local newspaper. And this is where the name Bigfoot caught on. However, a man named Ray Wallace in 2003 came forward to admit that their father actually made it up and was known to be a huge prankster. So, LOL to that. But that's where it started. That's where Bigfoot's name came from. Although there are a lot of evidence, you know, I say that lightly, quote unquote evidence. Mm-hmm. People have used like pictures, videos, footprints, DNA to try to say this is Bigfoot. And those who have seen it claim that like the color of its fur ranges from black, brown, reddish, and that Bigfoot is about 7 feet tall and like up to 1,000 pounds. So this is a big, big creature.
Yeah.
The sounds that it's known to be made, it's kind of like a growl or like a howl, although for the most part is pretty silent compared to like other creatures. And they also claim, which I think is really interesting, that they're very orderly and that they will stack stones. And I feel like if you live in the woods, especially in New England, you'll see a lot of stones that like stacked up. So it's like, could this be Bigfoot's doing? I don't know. So in 1995, there was something, and Shannon, what was that something?
I like the stack stone thing because you don't really have a lot of information on their habits. And yeah. It's a nice visual to think that they are just in the woods,
yeah,
really solo creatures, and they're just stacking rocks. They're keeping their fur tidy. Like,
I love it. Yes.
Love it. Well, there's an organization that I bet you didn't know existed, and it was founded in 1995, and it's called the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and it actually still exists today. So they claim that they are the oldest organization of their kind. I have their mission statement here written down that I'll read to you. It's the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization is a virtual community of scientists, journalists, and specialists from diverse backgrounds. The researchers who compose of the BFRO are engaged in projects, including field and laboratory investigations, designed to address various aspects of the Bigfoot phenomenon. As a result of the education experience of its members and the quality of their efforts, the BFRO is widely considered the most credible and respected investigative network involved in the study of the subject. They're a big deal.
Whoa. I love in their mission statement, they're like, we're respected.
Which came first?
Yeah.
Respect or saying that you're respected. Exactly. I do have to say that I spent some time on their website and it did feel like the type of website you would get a virus from. but I went ahead and perused it anyway, you know. They're busy logging firsthand accounts. They can't put in too much time on their website, you know. Honestly, it'd be suspicious if it was a well put together website.
Yeah, I completely agree. Thank you for doing the work here at this podcast.
And we're going to get our stories, our campfire stories from this site, because they have hundreds, if not thousands, of stories you can choose from. And it's actually kind of cool. Like, there's a map of the United States and Canada, and you can choose what region, you can narrow it down. They have a whole ranking system. So there's Class A sightings to Class C, and Class A means that the circumstances where misinterpretations or misidentification of other animals can be ruled out with great confidence. So they're like, we're pretty sure that this is Bigfoot right here. From the website, they have a few facts. You know, they've, again, been cataloging all these stories, so they have a lot of data. And from the BFRO, Bigfoot creatures live mostly in forested regions with abundant protein sources. So we're talking deer, we're talking, you know, like that kind of caliber. If they're that big, they need a lot of protein. And obviously it has to be wooded, because we would see them if they were just out in the desert.
That's right.
They consistently maintain low population levels in those areas, even where protein sources are high. Consequently, they have never become an ongoing nuisance to human communities or to human livestock, which therefore means that they stay undercover. Unlike gorillas or chimps, their groupings are small and mobile, making it difficult for us to hunt them. And their impact on the land is so subtle that it takes a very trained eye to notice it. Another thing that throws a wrench into noticing them is that they operate nocturnally, sometimes close to rural communities, and it can only be occasionally seen, heard, or detected. Because obviously it's hard, you know, like we think we know all these species out there, except for, I would say, we, you know, deep ocean, we know nothing about. But here on land, we have, I feel like, a pretty good handle of what species are out there. But
yes,
this is BFRO's stance. It's like, hey, there's not that many of them. And they like to be solo. So that's it.
I like it. I like that it's kind of like a Google search, but a Google search for Bigfoot specifically.
Yes, it is. It very is much that.
Yeah, I like it.
We all know the footage, I think, that is the most famous out of all of Bigfoot. It's the tall ape-like creature that's like looking over his shoulder, walking into the woods. And it's from 1967. This is from Six Figures National Park, and it hasn't been debunked. So, ooh, my candle's about to go out. Spooky.
It's so just kidding. Windy. A really
big breeze went through my window. But yes, so there, you know, like, it's one of those things where, yeah, there's not a lot of evidence for it, but there's not a lot of evidence against it either.
Exactly. And that's where the fun begins with Bigfoot.
Exactly.
So let's dive into the stories, right? But before we do, let's first hear a word from our sponsor. Alrighty, we are back, and we're gonna set the candle lit. I wonder if you can hear that. Hear my electrical.
Yeah, Lena has a fancier lighter. I have an old school. I can't hear that.
Hear the fire.
I cannot, but maybe they can.
Maybe they can.
We will not find out until editing.
That's right. Just know it's going. Alrighty. So we broke it up into four different stories. One's very quick, so don't worry. Okay, like, stick with us. And the first one is just the most recent story to talk about, like, hey, this is still happening, right?
Yeah, this was crazy because when I was researching for this episode, it literally, you know, I was just researching Bigfoot. And It was articles from 2 days ago. Like, what?
Wild. Wrote
five articles on this case because just recently this happened.
Exactly. So it's just this stuff, it's still happening, people. So we're going to talk about the most recent one. Then we're going to do a little hometown story. And then we're going to also talk about our specific locations where we are. So we'll talk about that. And they're pretty good. So let's jump in, shall we? So the first one is the one you were talking about. This article literally came out, what, like 3 days ago on August 27th. There was two sightings, actually. There wasn't just one, of Bigfoot in South Carolina. One as recently as August 7th. And they were considered Class A sightings. And there were three eyewitnesses. And this is their statement. The creature was walking upright, taking strides quickly to our left, and disappeared into the bush on the left side of the road, directly in front of us, the report states. We only witnessed the lower torso of the creature as its head and shoulders were hidden behind a pine tree and a palmetto stump on the left side of the road. So they're claiming they saw something. There's three people, you know, and the early sighting was on July 5th by a forester who claimed he heard, quote unquote, wood knocks and saw an area where a large animal clearly had laid down. Wild. It's a thing. Like, people are seeing things. And it's interesting, too, that, like, they don't automatically say bear or something, a known creature that we, you know, would know.
Yeah. And that's classified as a Class A sighting.
Mm-hmm.
This mouse is going to drive me crazy.
We got a Class A sighting on this mouse.
It is a Class A sighting. Jesus. Okay, so that was the most recent one. Now we're going into Alina and I's hometown hero. it's not really our hometown, but it's the general area. And I do want to preface this with that it's only a Class B. I know, disappointing.
Disappointing.
But this is from August of 2020, so pretty recent. And the location is the Seven Sisters, which is a group of hills within the Holyoke Mountain Range. And I just want to say that I have hiked these Seven Sisters, so I may have been so close to Bigfoot.
Oh my God, we should have had you like live podcasting looking for Bigfoot.
Oh my God, Alina, I think it was 2022.
Oh my God, you could have seen Bigfoot.
Definitely was.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Sugar. So what was observed? And this is from, again, the website. This contributor stated this. Hiking the Seven Sisters Trail from Mount Holyoke to the Notch in the Hadley Amherst area of Massachusetts. My hiking partner and I got to Taylor's Notch and could hear the wind ripping through the eerie, making eerie noises. We both heard a lot of whistling and breaking branches, which I initially attributed to the wind going through the rocky ledges of Taylor's Notch. We hiked over one large hill and the wind was lessening, but we realized the whistling was closer. And then there were whooping noises and calls along with the whistles. The calls were going back and forth, and I realized we were surrounded. We kept talking loudly and hoping to scare off any animals and kept my bear spray in hand for the next mile or so. Not sure what it was, but highly unusual and did not sound like a grown or baby bear, canine, coyote, mountain lion, or fox. I frequently hike and spend time outdoors. I am at a loss to what it was that day. I'm going back soon to see if I can find more.
Whoa.
Ooh. We don't know if they did go back. But.
Yeah. It kind of gives me the vibe of that episode we did in Russia where the hikers basically disappeared and no one knows like what happened.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
Now we're going to go into local to us independent. And again, this is a little bit trickier since Bigfoot is mostly on the West Coast or the Northeast, Northwest. And I'm here in the Northeast in Maine, but we still had our own stories. I went to the little Maine map We still have our own. This is from, we're going back in time to 1973.
Whoa.
This is in the Brunswick area. And this is the story. So there were actually four sightings all in the span of, I think, 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a character. Her name's Mrs. Huntington.
Mm-hmm.
That's character number one.
Character number one.
Mrs. Huntington reported that her daughters have seen the animal 3 or 4 times. The first sighting consisted of 4 youngsters on a bicycle seeing it. So we're picturing, like, again, this is 1973. I'm getting like E.T. vibe. I mean, this is a little bit earlier, but like,
E.T.
vibe, Stranger Things. Her daughters are on a bike around the neighborhood. They see something.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 Huntington children, who is Lois, who's 13, George, who's 10, and Scott, who's 8, and their friend Tammy, who's 12.
We're
riding along the road about a half a mile from the Huntington home. They matter-of-factly reported an encounter with a chimp. They're just like, hey, we saw a chimp.
Oh, that's funny. That's great. Okay, sorry.
This is
just imagine you just see like a wild chimp out there.
Well, maybe it was a pet that got loose, you know?
So true.
Mrs. Huntington would later tell reporters, quote, my 13-year-old daughter fell off her bike about 3 feet from him, and all he did was cock his head and look at her. It was described as an upright chimpanzee-like creature. The quiet, intelligent, reserved Lois, I like how we have adjectives to describe one child.
It's a true story.
So Lois is apparently a quiet, intelligent, reserved child. She reportedly told the Maine Sunday Telegram, quote, I fell right down in front of him and all he did was look at me. I would have known if it were a hippie or something.
Oh my God. Imagine like Mrs. Huntington warning her children, like, girls, like, what a hippie looks like. They're going to look apish.
Well, it's the 70s. So, of course, they know what a hippie looks like.
Yeah. They're like picturing like long hair.
Yeah. But she continued with, but it had a regular monkey face. You have seen a monkey before, haven't you?
Amazing. I love Lois.
The sighting number 2 was a gorilla-like animal standing on its hind legs, and it was observed by 2 or 3 times by James Washburn. Officers searching the area found moose and deer tracks, which isn't necessarily uncommon in Maine. Sighting number 3 is by Mrs. Huntington herself, who, now we get our age, she's 33. She was driving home from a baseball game when she saw the ape, quote-unquote, peeking out from the bushes on Durham Road. It was 20 feet away and made a mad dash on 2 legs into a heavily wooded area. The exact description of the ape was that it was a little over 5 feet tall with a shaggy black coat and weighing about 350 pounds. She said it had a, quote, monkey face, and it was, quote, chimp-like, was another way it was described. She would coasted her vehicle so as not to scare it, but when it apparently saw her vehicle, it ran into the woods. She reportedly saw it 2 separate times during this incident, because as she returned to the neighbor's, she saw it again. She stayed in her car as the others searched the woods. She was sitting in her car when she saw it again peering at her from a crotch in the tree.
Whoa, we got a stalker.
So we have something a little different here. This is a short Bigfoot, if this is what this is. Mm-hmm. However, it could be a baby. I mean, maybe a baby got loose and the parents were like, get back over here. And then it wanted to play with the children. That's it.
How wholesome.
So wholesome. Oh my God. It's so lonely. It wants some. Mm-hmm. It really does. Some friends. So soon after, the police were notified and a search began. the sheriff's apartment, Cumberland counties, or and a couple of different counties in Maine, the Maine State Police, State of Maine Game and Wardens, they all came to the scene. Like, we got this. Mm-hmm. We can't do this.
Yes.
Altogether, there were over 30 officers and 30 police cars searching for this animal for 2 hours. And there was also a helicopter that was used in a search for the following days. And I just like how it was only for 2 hours. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like a short period of time. Like, 2 hours goes by in a blink. But fair enough. Tracks were found near a cemetery, but they were not necessarily directly associated with the sighting. It looked to be human, but had claws. Curious.
Interesting.
They appeared to be that of a bear. Mm-hmm. At first that night, some of the officers brushed off the whole incident as a bear sighting. But later this would change. And this is where the fourth sighting comes in. So there were several more unidentified witnesses had come forth the next day saying they had seen, quote unquote, it. And at 7:30 p.m., a couple by the name of Peter and Jean Merrill found a footprint behind the cemetery, and they said it looked like a chimpanzee print. The deputy sheriff examined the prints and cast what was described as one that was rather deep. He said it was about 5 inches wide, with the thumb part broken off. Whatever made it was probably 300 to 350 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was definitely not a bear track. And he said, I don't know what's going on here, and I'd rather not express an opinion. Okay, sir.
He's stepping away.
He's like, this is getting too hairy for me.
Yep. It's getting out of control.
Out of control. And then there's something that kind of puts a wrench into this whole theory. And it's reports of a gorilla suit was not returned since March to a Portland area costume shop. And it was mentioned by the newspaper, but it did not seem to be considered related to these incidents. So we just need to know that there's a missing gorilla costume
out there.
Been missing for months. Everybody's worried about it.
That's why it's classified B.
That's right. Actually, no, I think this one's class A. I didn't write it down, but I think this one is. Don't take this away from me.
This is legit.
So by Saturday, I think this is 3 days later, there were many more phone calls from others confirming they had seen the animal in the area, and the police were taking the sightings very seriously. However, nothing came out of it.
Interesting.
And that's my main Bigfoot story for you. But I just like the wholesome kids on a bike scene. You can clearly picture it. It's like a little movie. It's like the beginning of E.T. or Stranger Things.
Totally. I like cinematic. I like it a lot. Alrighty. Thank you, Shannon, so much for talking about your local story. Now we'll dive into mine. So this is takes place kind of near your time, 1980. But this wasn't reported in 2000 and until 2007, which is like at the height of the Britney Spears era. But I digress. But this is in the LA County area. And for my story, I'm actually going to talk in first person. So I'm going to say a lot of I's, but just know that it's not me. It's going to be the person who observed this sighting, right? So let's dive in. First, as a matter of background, I want to tell a little about myself. It will help explain the delay in ever reporting this incident. The sighting occurred about 3 months prior to my entering of the United States Army. I served for 3 years as a paratrooper with a top secret clearance. Do we ever find out who my name is? I don't think we do, actually. I think this is an anonymous.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I can look it up.
No worries. After my time in service, I became a Los Angeles police officer. I did that for 13 years. I am now a federal agent working for an OIG out of Washington, D.C. With that background, you can probably understand my reluctance to discuss the sighting with too many people. It really boils down to a potential career killer. That being said, the incident did occur and I remember it vividly. Many years after the event, I reconnected with my friend, the witness, and asked him to tell me the story as he recalled it. I wanted to check my memory to see if his matched mine, and it did to a T. Only a few months ago, I spoke with my brother-in-law, a witness after the fact. I asked him if he remembered the event, and he did. It should have been known that he is not the kind of person that would, quote unquote, buy into the story, as he had not been semi-involved. Anyways, this is what happened. So now we're getting into like the story time, which is kind of nice to just, his bio, just to be like, he sounds like a credible source. Like he's not going to just, according to him, just make up something, because he's a very high ranking in sense of the clearance world, and so he's not going to just like make up a story to just make up a story.
Right. And the person that submitted this report, it's just MW, the initials.
Okay, which I guess makes sense given his job. So anyways, and who knows, these names could have been changed, you know? So apparently him and his friend Craig were both 17 years old and waiting to leave for basic training for the Army. He was due to leave in June and I would go in August of 1980. We were staying with my sister and brother-in-law at the time. They lived in a cabin in Green Valley, California. So Craig and I enjoyed our last months as civilians in that area and used it to train for the difficult training ahead of us. We ran every day along the mountain roads and hiked the hills trying to get into prime shape. In May, we decided to test ourselves and camp out for a full 7 days. We knew the perfect place for this would be called, or for this, what would be called, what we called the old campground. Because of its isolated surroundings and terrain, knew it was going to be perfect for climbing and hiking. So we packed up a week's worth of supplies, and although my sister Cindy and her husband Tom offered to drive us, we decided to act like soldiers and walk to the location. We did this with full backpacks. My sister and Tom advised us that they would check on us at least every other day, and that they would bring us food and lemonade and such, which is so sweet. Also offered to provide us with 2 weapons to be used for protection against any strangers that may harm us. After all, this was before cell phones and we would be on our own big time. There was also a heavy rattlesnake threat in the area, so we happily took him up on the offer. Tom met us at an area near the mine shafts later today and gave us an M1 rifle and a 12 gauge shotgun with ammo for both. And then they, of course, had to find a spot to camp. So they're laying down in their tents, talking, you know, setting the moon, just like Shin and I, we got candles going, they're about a campfire going.
Best friends,
you know, we're about to embark on this journey.
Summer, anything can happen.
Shannon, 100%, anything can happen. And by the light of the flashlights, they both heard the very loud snap of a deadfall in the woods behind the tent. We sat up, frozen and listening. We heard what sounded like very large and heavy person slowly walking around our site, making no effort to conceal his presence, judging from the loud sound of breaking sticks and the brush. We were both scared, believing that someone was out there. I mean, this is kind of like a terrifying, vulnerable. It's
terrifying. Yeah.
So we exited the tent and Craig with a shotgun and me with the M1. I started yelling very, very loud. Hey, we know you are there. We have guns and we'll shoot. Again, we heard the sound of someone walking slowly but methodically around from our left to right. We shined our lights in the direction but could not see anything but trees and bushes. Our brushes. We talked amongst ourselves, wondering if it could be a bear or something, but we decided that it was a person and not an animal. After much yelling and warning that we would shoot, I decided to fire a few rounds in the direction of the noise. How crazy that sounds now, and I did just that. Or I guess he's saying, like, that's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I fired about 3 rounds into the trees, and the sound was unbelievable. The weapon blasted. I mean, here's the thing about shotguns. They really do cover a good large mass, you know, so good on him for just like having, you know, just some sort of protection, I suppose. So the weapon blasted and the sound echoed into the night, roaring into the canyons and fading off into the night air. we stood in silence to our utter disbelief and eventual horror, whatever it was, began to move again, still left to the right in a circle around us. What we both thought and discussed later was that it was no animal would have stuck around after the horrific noise of the M1. Most normal people would have not stuck around either. Whoever, whatever it was not there to only stuck around, but appeared from casual sound of slow walking to be less concerned by our weapons. We made a decision to vacate the area post, you know, the whole debacle. Grabbing their coats, we climbed on the embankment up to the dirt road, and carrying our weapons, we ran the entire way, about 3 miles more or less, back to the main highway. We spent a very long night curled up on the concrete drainage ditch waiting for the sun to rise. Every hour or so, a lone truck would come by and the sound of that brought us comfort. Again, it was a long night. The next day, we hiked back to the site expecting to find our tent and all of our supplies missing. But to our surprise, everything was exactly where it was left. Nothing was out of place. We gathered our things and hiked back to the open area of the old campground. We decided not to sleep in the tent because it limited our vision and instead laid our sleeping bags out in an open area above the creek. After a day of climbing cliffs and cooking and such, night fell again. That night, just as the sun set and darkness was beginning to fall, Craig and I were walking in the direction of the main road. We were looking for rattlesnakes because we had shot one earlier on the dirt road in the same area. As we walked by side by side with him, with me on the left, both holding weapons, we saw it. Standing just on the dirt road facing us was a Bigfoot. There can be no doubt at all about what it was. We could see it very clearly. He was about 8 or 9 feet tall and stood with his left shoulder, even with the edge of the trail. He was covered in dark hair and long arms. We did not smell anything unusual, as I have since read about other sightings. The strange thing about him was the absolute indifference in his expression. He didn't look threatening. He didn't look scared. He just stood there looking at us, almost bored. I instinctively brought my right hand up against Craig's chest, and we both stopped dead in our tracks. We never took our eyes off the Bigfoot, and we spoke. I said, "Do you see that? Are we seeing this?" Craig said, "What do we do? What should we do?" We both started to walk backwards as we spoke, very slowly and involuntarily. The Bigfoot just looked at us for a few moments. Then, and I will never forget the detail of this, he just slowly and very casually turned to his left and began to walk into the forest. When he did that, Craig and I stopped and started talking to each other. Do we shoot it? Do we shoot it? What do we do? Do we follow it? As we talked, we heard the sound we both immediately recognized from the prior night. The sound of Bigfoot slowly walking deeper into the woods, breaking deadfall twigs, branches as he went. We never did fire a shot or follow him. We stayed up late and slept in shifts at the campground and did not hear from Bigfoot again. The next day, Tom came up with food and supplies. We ran to him and told him the details of what happened. It was very clear by his expression that he did not believe us. We took him to the exact spot where we saw Bigfoot, and we discovered a trail of giant footprints leading from the trail into the woods. Tom smiled and told us that we did a good job making them. We were so frustrated and begged Tom to follow the tracks with us. We all followed them, and they went into and across the creek. On the other side, we found a large red anthill with a footprint right on top of it. I asked Tom, how could we have done that? He just shook his head and smiled. We followed the tracks to the point where two large hills formed and a valley that sloped upwards in the mountain area. The ground turned rocky and the footprint stopped. This is what happened. I've lived with this memory for many years. I'm now 45 years old. I'm less concerned about what people think of me in terms of this incident. It is a fact, and because of it, I know for sure Bigfoot lives, or at least lived in the area of Green Valley, California.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun. Wow,
that's
wow,
a good
wow.
Story.
Yeah.
So, my goodness, there's just like a lot to unpack here. I mean, between all the stories, what we've just talked about, my goodness, like Shannon, what are you thinking? Like, where is your tinfoil hat on Bigfoot?
I don't know. I kind of feel like it's on the shelf, but like I'm standing next to the shelf only because, you know, all of these stories could just be made up. Like this guy could have just had like a nice way of storytelling, but yep. I like the idea of it. And I don't think it's like absolutely insane out of the question, but I don't think I'm holding the tinfoil hat. But again, I like the mystery of it. I like the whimsy of it. You know, it's like the Yeti. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, it's fun to think that there are still unknown creatures out there in the world. How about you?
I agree with you. My tinfoil hat is just on the shelf, but I, like you, it's next to me. I just feel like with so many sightings, like, how do we not have more concrete evidence other than just people seeing it? Not to say that they're not telling the truth. I just think with technology these days, like, we would have been able to figure out something. We discovered dinosaurs, you know? So, I don't know. I just have a hard time believing it. But I also have a hard time believing, like, how do they continue? Like, do they live on forever? Are they creating families? What's the situation here?
Yeah, I think they're creating families, but it does bring a good question. I think I saw this somewhere about why haven't we seen bodies? Like, why haven't we come across a skeleton of a Bigfoot? But they say that, like, oh, well, the areas that they're most likely in, they'll decay faster than, like, you'll find them and blah. You know, it's not like they're in a bog where you find 1,000-year-old body in there. But it does beg the question, you know, if we still have bones and stuff from dinosaurs, then, like, we should probably have bones of a Yeti or a Bigfoot.
Exactly. Just very interesting. I don't know. It intrigues me. I just don't think I fully believe in it 100%.
I think it's one of those things where I would have to see one in person to believe, you know? Unlike ghosts, like, I can believe that they exist without me physically seeing one. And I hope I don't. But Bigfoot, I feel like I would have to be in the woods and see one to, like, really believe.
Yeah, exactly. Curious. I don't know.
Curious.
Well, that wraps up our episode. We hope you guys enjoyed the storytelling. You know, again, let's see. Oh, no, the candle's really hot. I was going to do a little ASMR candle burning, but
don't touch it.
We hope you guys enjoyed, you know, this format. And thank you guys so much for sticking around, letting us take a little break, you know, from the pod to just rejuvenate and get back into it. So we will see you guys not this upcoming Thursday, but the following, because we do bi-weekly Thursday drops, if you don't know already. But you can stay on top of what we are up to on Instagram at Bare Roots Pod, B-A-R-E. And also be sure to leave us, like, a 5-star review on whatever listening platform you're listening to. And we'll see you guys next time.
We'll see you in spooky season.
Oh, goodness. So stick around for spooky season.
Bye.
Bye.